and while it was obviously a sword, it was not a familiar shape. At least no one in this town would have found it familiar. It looked as if an alchemist had distilled a dozen swords, and when the crucible had cooled, this was lying in the bottom. A sword, in its pure form. It was slender and graceful. It was deadly as a sharp stone beneath swift water. Coate held it a moment. His hand did not shake. Then he set the sword on the mounting board. Its grey-white metal shone against the dark rower behind it. While the handle could be seen, it was dark enough to be almost indistinguishable from the wood. The word beneath it, black against blackness, seemed to reproach. Folly. Coate climbed down, and for a moment he and Bast stood side by side, silently looking up. Bast broke the silence.
"It is rather striking," he said, as if he regretted the truth. "But,"
he trailed off, trying to find appropriate words. He shuddered. Coate clapped him on the back, oddly cheerful. "Don't bother being disturbed on my account." He seemed more lively now, as if his activity lent him energy. "I like it," he said with sudden conviction, and hung the black scabbard from one of the mounting board's pegs. Then there were things to be done. Bottles to be polished and put back in place, lunch to be made, lunch clutter to be cleaned. Things were cheerful for a while, in a pleasant, bustling way. The two talked of small matters as they worked, and while they moved around a great deal, it was obvious they were reluctant to finish whatever task they were close to completing, as if they both dreaded the moment when the work would end, and the silence would fill the room again. Then something odd happened. The door opened, and noise poured into the waystone like a gentle wave. People bustled in, talking and dropping bundles of belongings. They chose tables and threw their coats over the backs of chairs. One man, wearing a shirt of heavy metal rings, unbuckled a sword and leaned it against a wall. Two or three wore knives on their belts. Four or five called for drinks. Coate and Bast watched for a moment, then moved smoothly into action. Coate smiled and began pouring drinks. Bast darted outside to see if there were horses that needed stabling. In 10 minutes, the inn was a different place. Coins rang on the bar, cheese and fruit were set on platters, and a large copper pot was hung to simmer in the kitchen. Men moved tables and chairs about to better suit their group of nearly a dozen people. Coate identified them as they came in, two men and two women, wagoneers, rough from years of being outside and smiling to be spending a night out of the wind, three guards with hard eyes, smelling of iron, a tinker with a pot belly and a ready smile showing his few remaining teeth. Two young men, one sandy-haired, one dark, well-dressed and well-spoken, travellers sensible enough to hook up with a larger group for protection on the road. The settling-in period lasted an hour or two. Prices of rooms were dickered over. Friendly arguments started about who slept with whom. Minor necessities were brought in from wagons or saddlebags. Baths were requested and water heated. Hay was taken to the horses, and Coate topped off the oil in all the lamps. The tinker hurried outside to make use of the remaining daylight. He walked his two-wheel mule cart through the town streets. Children crowded around, begging for candy and stories and shims. When it became apparent that nothing was going to be handed out, most of them lost interest. They formed a circle with a boy in the middle and started to clap, keeping the beat with a children's song that had been ages old when their grandparents had chanted it. "When the heath fire turns to blue, what to do, what to do? Run outside, run and hide." Laughing, the boy in the middle tried to break out of the circle, while the other children pushed him back.
"Tinker!" the old man's voice rang out like a bell. "Pot mender! Knife grinder! Willow wand! Water finder! Cut cork, mother leaf! Silk scarves off the city streets! Write in paper! Sweetmeats!"
This drew the attention of the children. They flocked back to him, making a small parade as he walked down the street, singing,
"Belt leather, black pepper, Fine lace and bright feather. Tinker in town tonight, gone tomorrow. Work him through the evening light. Come wife, come daughter. I've small cloth and rose water.
After a couple of minutes, he settled outside the waystone, set up his sharpening wheel, and began to grind a knife. As the adults began to gather around the old man, the children returned to their game. A girl in the center of the circle put one hand over her eyes and tried to catch the other children as they ran away, clapping and chanting.
When his eyes are black as crow, where to go, where to go, near and far, here they are!
The tinker dealt with everyone in turn, sometimes two or three at a time. He traded sharp knives for dull ones and a small coin. He sold shears and needles, copper pots and small bottles that wives hid quickly after buying them. He traded buttons and bags of cinnamon and salt, limes from Tinuay, chocolate from Tarbean, polished horn from Eriway. All the while the children continued to sing,
"See a man without a face? Move like ghosts from place to place. What's their plan? What's their plan? Chandrayaan! Chandrayaan!"
Coat guessed the travellers had been together a month or so, long enough to become comfortable with each other, but not long enough to be squabbling over small things. They smelled of road dust and horses. He breathed it in like perfume. Best of all was the noise, leather creaking, men laughing, the fire cracked and spat, the women flirted, someone even knocked over a chair. For the first time in a long while there was no silence in the Waystone Inn, or if there was, it was too faint to be noticed, or too well hidden. Coat was in the middle of it all, always moving like a man tending a large, complex machine, ready with a drink just as a person called for it. He talked and listened in the right amounts. He laughed at jokes, shook hands, smiled and whisked coins off the bar as if he truly needed the money. Then, when the time for songs came and everyone had sung their favourites and still wanted more, Coat led them from behind the bar, clapping to keep a beat. With the fire shining in his hair, he sang Tinker Tanner, with more verses than anyone had heard before, and no one minded in the least. Hours later, the common room had a warm, jovial feel to it. Coat was kneeling on the hearth, building up the fire, when someone spoke behind him.
"Kvoth?"
The innkeeper turned, wearing a slightly confused smile.
"Sir?"
It was one of the well-dressed travellers. He swayed a little.
"You're Kvoth?"
"Coat, sir," Coat replied in an indulgent tone that mothers use on children and innkeepers use on drunks.
"Kvoth the Bloodless!"
The man pressed ahead with the dogged persistence of the inebriated.
"You looked familiar, but I couldn't finger it."
He smiled proudly and tapped a finger to his nose.
"Then I heard you sing and I knew it was you! I heard you in Imre once, crying my eyes out afterward. I never heard anything like that before or since. Broke my heart!"
The young man's sentences grew jumbled as he continued, but his face remained earnest.
"I knew it couldn't be you, but I thought it was. Even though... But who else has your hair?"
He shook his head, trying unsuccessfully to clear it.
"I saw the place in Imre where you killed him. By the fountain. The cobblestones are all shattered."
He frowned and concentrated on the word.
"Shattered! They say no one can mend them."
The sandy-haired man paused again, squinting for focus. He seemed surprised by the innkeeper's reaction. The red-haired man was grinning.
"Are you saying I look like Kvoth? The Kvoth? I've always thought so myself. I have an engraving of him in back. My assistant teases me for it. Would you tell him what you just told me?"
Coat threw a final log onto the fire and stood. But as he stepped from the hearth, one of his legs twisted underneath him and he fell heavily to the floor, knocking over a chair. Several of the travellers hurried over, but the innkeeper was already on his feet, waving people back to their seats.
No, I'm fine. Sorry to startle anyone.
In spite of his grin, it was obvious he'd hurt himself. His face was tight with pain, and he leaned heavily on a chair for support.
Took an arrow in the knee on my way through the Eld 3 summers ago. It gives out every now and then.
He grimaced and said wistfully, "It's what made me give up the good life on the road." He reached down to touch his oddly bent leg tenderly. One of the mercenaries spoke up.
"I'd put a poultice on that or it'll swell terrible."
Coat touched it again and nodded.
"I think you're wise, sir."
He turned to the sandy-haired man who stood swaying slightly by the fireplace.
"Could you do me a favor, son?"
The man nodded dumbly.
"Just close the flue," Coat gestured towards the fireplace. "Bast, will you help me upstairs?"
Bast hurried over and drew Coat's arm around his shoulders. Coat leaned on him with every other step as they made their way through the doorway and up the stairs.
"Arrow in the leg?" Bast asked under his breath. "Are you really that embarrassed from taking a little fall?"
"Thank God you're as gullible as they are,"
Coat said sharply as soon as they were out of sight. He began to curse under his breath as he climbed a few more steps, his knee obviously uninjured. Bast's eyes widened, then narrowed. Coat stopped at the top of the steps and rubbed his eyes. "One of them knows who I am." Coat frowned. "Suspect."
"Which one?"
Bast asked with a mix of apprehension and anger.
"Green shirt, sandy hair, the one nearest to me by the fireplace. Give him something to make him sleep. He's already been drinking. No one will think twice if he happens to pass out."
Bast thought briefly.
"Nymane?"
"Menka."
Bast raised an eyebrow but nodded. Coat straightened.
"Listen 3 times, Bast."
Bast blinked once and nodded. Coat spoke crisply and cleanly.
"I was a city-licensed escort from Raelian, wounded while successfully defending a caravan. Arrow in right knee. 3 years ago, summer, a grateful Kaeldish merchant gave me money to start an inn. His name is Deolan. We were traveling from Purvis. Mention it casually. Do you have it?"
"I hear you 3 times, Reshi,"
Bast replied formally.
"Go."
Half an hour later, Bast brought a bowl to his master's room, reassuring him that everything was well downstairs. Coat nodded and gave terse instructions that he not be disturbed for the rest of the night. Closing the door behind himself, Bast's expression was worried. He stood at the top of the stairs for some time, trying to think of something he could do. It is hard to say what troubled Bast so much. Coat didn't seem noticeably changed in any way, except perhaps that he moved a little slower, and whatever small spark the night's activity had lit behind his eyes was dimmer now. In fact, it could hardly be seen. In fact, it may not have been there at all. Coat sat in front of the fire and ate his meal mechanically as if he were simply finding a place inside himself to keep the food. After the last bite, he sat staring into nothing, not remembering what he had eaten or what it tasted like. The fire snapped, making him blink and look around the room. He looked down at his hands, one curled inside the other, resting in his lap. After a moment, he lifted and spread them as if warming them by the fire. They were graceful, with long, delicate fingers. He watched them intently as if expecting them to do something on their own. Then he lowered them to his lap, one hand lightly cupping the other, and returned to watching the fire. Expressionless, motionless, he sat until there was nothing left but grey ash and dully glowing coals. As he was undressing for bed, the fire flared. The red light traced faint lines across his body, across his back and arms. All the scars were smooth and silver, streaking him like lightning, like lines of gentle remembering. The flare of flame revealed them all briefly. Old wounds and new. All the scars were smooth and silver. except one. The fire flickered and died. Sleep met him like a lover in an empty bed. The travellers left early the next morning. Bast tended to their needs, explaining his master's knee was swollen quite badly and he didn't feel up to taking the stairs so early in the day. Everyone understood except for the sandy-haired merchant's son, who was too groggy to understand much of anything. The guards exchanged smiles and rolled their eyes, while the tinker gave an impromptu sermon on the subject of temperance. Bast recommended several unpleasant hangover cures. After they left, Bast tended to the inn, which was no great chore as there were no customers. Most of his time was spent trying to find ways to amuse himself. Sometime after noon, Coat came down the stairs to find him crushing walnuts on the bar with a heavy leather-bound book.
"Good morning, Reshi."
"Good morning, Bast," Coat said. "Any news?"
"The Orison boy stopped by, wanted to know if we needed any mutton."
Coat nodded, almost as if he had been suspecting the news.
"How much did you order?"
Bast made a face.
"I hate mutton, Reshi. It tastes like wet mittens."
Coat shrugged and made his way to the door.
"I've got some errands to run. Keep an eye on things, will you?"
"I always do."
Outside the Waystone Inn, the air lay still and heavy on the empty dirt road that ran through the center of town. The sky was a featureless gray sheet of cloud that looked as if it wanted to rain, but couldn't quite work up the energy. Coat walked across the street to the open front of the smithy. The smith wore his hair cropped short, and his beard thick and bushy. As Coat watched, he carefully drove a pair of nails through a scythe blade's collar, fixing it firmly onto a curved wooden handle.
"Hello, Caleb."
The smith leaned the scythe up against the wall.
"What can I do for you, Master Coat?"
"Did the Orison boys stop by your place too?"
Caleb nodded.
"They still losing sheep?" Coat asked.
"Actually, some of the lost ones finally turned up. Torn up awful. Practically shredded."
"Wolves?"
Coat asked. The smith shrugged.
"It's the wrong time of year. But what else could it be, a bear? I guess they're just selling off what they can't watch over properly, them being short-handed and all."
"Short-handed?"
"Had to let their hired man go because of taxes. And their oldest son took the king's coin early this summer. He's off fighting the rebels in Menat now."
"Menaras," Coat corrected gently. "If you see their boy again, let him know I'd be willing to buy about 3 halves.
"I'll do that."
The smith gave the innkeeper a knowing look.
"Is there anything else?"
"Well," Coat looked away, suddenly self-conscious. "I was wondering if you have any rod iron lying around," he said, not meeting the smith's eye. "It doesn't have to be anything fancy, mind you, just plain old pig iron would do nicely."
Caleb chuckled.
"I didn't know if you were going to stop by at all. Old Cobb and the rest came by day before yesterday."
He walked over to a workbench and lifted up a piece of canvas.
"I made a couple of extras, just in case."
Coat picked up a rod of iron about 2 feet long and swung it casually with one hand.
"Clever man."
"I know my business,"
the smith said smugly.
"You need anything else?"
"Actually,"
Coat said as he settled the bar of iron comfortably against his shoulder,
"there is one other thing. Do you have a spare apron and set of forge gloves?"
"Could I?"
Caleb said hesitantly.
"Why?"
"There's an old bramble patch behind the inn."
Coat nodded in the direction of the waystone.
"I'm thinking of tearing it up so I can put in a garden next year. But I don't fancy losing half my skin doing it."
The smith nodded and gestured for Coat to follow him into the back of the shop.
"I've got my old set,"
he said as he dug out a pair of heavy gloves and a stiff leather apron. Both were charred dark in places and stained with grease.
"They're not pretty, but they'll keep the worst of it off you, I suppose."
"What are they worth to you?"
Coat asked, reaching for his purse. The smith shook his head.
A jot would be a great plenty. They're no good to me or the boy.
The innkeeper handed over a coin, and the smith stuffed them into an old burlap sack.
You sure you want to do it now?
The smith asked.
We haven't had rain in a while. The ground'll be softer after the spring thaw.
Coates shrugged. My granda always told me that fall's the time to root up something you don't want coming back to trouble you. Coates mimicked the quaver of an old man's voice.
Things are too full of life in the spring months. In the summer, they're too strong and won't let go. Autumn.
He looked around at the changing leaves on the trees.
Autumn's the time. In autumn, everything is tired and ready to die.
Later that afternoon, Coates sent Bast to catch up on his sleep. Then he moved listlessly around the inn, doing small jobs left over from the night before. There were no customers. When evening finally came, he lit the lamps and began to page disinterestedly through a book. Fall was supposed to be the year's busiest time, but travellers were scarce lately. Coates knew with bleak certainty how long winter would be. He closed the inn early, something he had never done before. He didn't bother sweeping. The floor didn't need it. He didn't wash the tables or the bar. None had been used. He polished a bottle or two, locked the door, and went to bed. There was no one around to notice the difference. No one except Bast, who watched his master, and worried, and waited. Chapter 4 Halfway to Nowhere. Chronicler walked. Yesterday he had limped, but today there was no part of his feet that didn't hurt, so limping did no good. He had searched for horses in Abbotsford and Rhanish, offering outrageous prices for even the most broken-down animals. But in small towns like these, people didn't have horses to spare, especially not with harvest fast approaching. Despite a hard day's walking, he was still on the road when night fell, making the rutted dirt road a stumbling ground of half-seen shapes. After 2 hours of fumbling through the dark, Chronicler saw light flickering through the trees and abandoned any thought of making it to Nowhere that night, deciding a farmstead's hospitality would be welcome enough. He left the road, blundering through the trees toward the light, but the fire was farther away than he had thought, and larger. It wasn't lamplight from a house or even sparks from a campfire. It was a bonfire roaring in the ruins of an old house, little more than two crumbling stone walls. Huddled into the corner those two walls made was a man. He wore a heavy hooded cloak, bundled up as if it were full winter and not a mild autumn evening. Chronicler's hopes rose at the sight of a small cook fire with a pot hanging over it. But as he came close, he caught a foul scent mingling with the wood smoke. It reeked of burning hair and rotting flowers. Chronicler quickly decided that whatever the man was cooking in the iron pot, he wanted none of it. Still, even a place next to a fire was better than curling up by the side of the road. Chronicler stepped into the circle of firelight.
I saw your he stopped, as the figure sprang quickly to its feet. A sword held with both hands. No, not a sword, a long, dark cudgel of some sort, too regularly shaped to be a piece of firewood.
Chronicler stopped dead in his tracks.
I was just looking for a place to sleep, he said quickly, his hand unconsciously clutching at the circle of iron that hung around his neck. I don't want any trouble. I'll leave you to your dinner.
He took a step backward. The figure relaxed, and the cudgel dropped to grate metallically against a stone.
Charred body of God, what are you doing out here at this time of night?
I was headed to Nowhere and saw your fire.
You just followed a strange fire into the woods at night?
The hooded figure shook his head.
You might as well come here.
He motioned Chronicler closer, and the scribe saw he was wearing thick leather gloves.
Telu, anyway. Have you had bad luck your whole life, or have you been saving it all up for tonight?
I don't know who you're waiting for, Chronicler said, taking a step backwards, but I'm sure you'd rather do it alone.
Shut up and listen, the man said sharply. I don't know how much time we have.
He looked down and rubbed at his face.
God, I never know how much to tell you people. If you don't believe me, you'll think I'm crazy. If you do believe me, you'll panic and be worse than useless.
Looking back up, he saw Chronicler hadn't moved.
Get over here, damn you. If you go back out there, you're as good as dead.
Chronicler glanced over his shoulder into the dark of the forest.
Why? What's out there?
The man gave a short, bitter laugh and shook his head in exasperation.
Honestly.
He ran his hand absent-mindedly through his hair, brushing his hood back in the process. In the firelight, his hair was impossibly red, his eyes a shocking, vibrant green. He looked at Chronicler, sizing him up.
Demons, he said. Demons, in the shape of big, black spiders.
Chronicler relaxed.
There's no such thing as demons.
From his tone, it was obvious he'd said the same thing many, many times before. The red-haired man gave an incredulous laugh.
Well, I guess we can all go home then.
He flashed a manic grin at Chronicler.
Listen, I'm guessing you're an educated man. I respect that, and for the most part, you're right.
His expression went serious.
But here and now, tonight, you're wrong. Wrong as wrong can be. You don't want to be on that side of the fire when you figure that out.
The flat certainty in the man's voice sent a chill down Chronicler's back. Feeling more than slightly foolish, he stepped delicately around to the other side of the bonfire. The man sized him up quickly.
I don't suppose you have any weapons.
Chronicler shook his head.
It doesn't really matter. A sword wouldn't do you much good.
He handed Chronicler a heavy piece of firewood.
You probably won't be able to hit one, but it's worth a try. They're fast. If one of them gets on you, just fall down. Try to land on it. Crush it with your body. Roll on it. If you get hold of one, throw it into the fire.
He drew the hood back over his head, speaking quickly.
If you have any extra clothes, put them on. If you have a blanket you could wrap.
He stopped suddenly and looked out across the circle of firelight.
Get your back against the wall,
he said abruptly, bringing his iron cudgel up with both hands. Chronicler looked past the bonfire. Something dark was moving in the trees.
They came into the light, moving low across the ground.
Black shapes, many-legged and large as cartwheels. One, quicker than the rest, rushed into the firelight without hesitating, moving with the disturbing, sinuous speed of a scuttling insect. Before Chronicler could raise his piece of firewood, the thing skirted sideways around the bonfire and sprang at him, quick as a cricket. Chronicler threw up his hands just as the black thing struck his face and chest. Its cold, hard legs scrabbled for a hold, and he felt bright stripes of pain across the backs of his arm. Staggering away, the scribe felt his heel snag on the rough ground, and he began to topple over backward, arms flailing wildly. As he fell, Chronicler caught one last glimpse of the circle of firelight. More of the black things were scuttling out of the dark, their feet beating a quick staccato rhythm against roots and rocks and leaves. On the other side of the fire, the man in the heavy cloak held his iron cudgel ready with both hands. He stood perfectly still, perfectly silent, waiting. Still falling backwards, with the dark thing on top of him, Chronicler felt a dull, dark explosion as the back of his head struck the stone wall behind him. The world slowed, turned blurry, then black. Chronicler opened his eyes to a confusing mass of dark shapes and firelight. His skull throbbed. There were several lines of bright, clear pain crossing the backs of his arms, and a dull ache that pulled at his left side every time he drew in a breath. After a long moment of concentration, the world came into a blurry focus. The bundled man sat nearby. He was no longer wearing his gloves, and his heavy cloak hung off his body in loose tatters, but other than that, he seemed unscathed. His hood was up, hiding his face.
You're awake?
The man asked curiously.
That's good. You can never be sure with a head wound.
The hood tilted a bit.
Can you talk? Do you know where you are?
Yes,
Chronicler said thickly. It seemed to take far too much effort to make a single word.
Even better. Now a third time pays for all. Do you think you can stand up and lend me a hand? We need to burn and bury the bodies.
Chronicler moved his head a bit and felt suddenly dizzy and nauseous.
What happened?
I might have broken a couple of your ribs, the man said. One of them was all over you. I didn't have a lot of options.
He shrugged.
I'm sorry, for whatever that's worth. I've already stitched up the cuts on your arms. They should heal up nicely.
They're gone?
The hood nodded once.
The Skrail don't retreat. They're like wasps from a hive. They keep attacking until they die.
A horrified look spread over Chronicler's face.
There's a hive of these things?
Dear God, no. There were just these five, still. We have to burn and bury them just to be sure. I already cut the wood we'll need, ash and rowan.
Chronicler gave a laugh that sounded slightly hysterical.
Just like the children's song. Let me tell you what to do. Dig a pit that's 10 by 2, ash and elm and rowan too.
Yes, indeed,
the bundled man said dryly.
You'd be surprised at the sorts of things hidden away in children's songs. But while I don't think we need to dig the entire 10 feet down, I wouldn't refuse a little help.
He trailed off meaningfully. Chronicler moved one hand to feel the back of his head gingerly, then looked at his fingers, surprised that they weren't covered in blood.
I think I'm fine,
he said as he cautiously levered himself up onto one elbow, and from there into a sitting position.
Is there any...
His eyes flickered and he went limp, falling bonelessly backwards. His head struck the ground, bounced once, and came to rest tilted slightly to one side. Coat sat patiently for a few long moments, watching the unconscious man. When there was no movement other than the chest slowly rising and falling, he came stiffly to his feet and knelt at Chronicler's side. Coat lifted one eyelid, then the other, and grunted at what he saw, not seeming particularly surprised.
I don't suppose there's any chance of you waking up again, he asked without much hope in his voice.
He tapped Chronicler's pale cheek lightly.
No chance at...
A drop of blood spotted Chronicler's forehead, followed quickly by another. Coach straightened up so that he was no longer leaning over the unconscious man and wiped the blood away as best he could, which wasn't very well, as his hands were covered in blood themselves.
Sorry, he said absently.
He gave a deep sigh and pushed back his hood. His red hair was matted down against his head and half his face was smeared with drying blood. Slowly he began to peel away the tattered remains of his cloak. Underneath was a leather blacksmith's apron, wildly scored with cuts. He removed that as well, revealing a plain grey shirt of homespun. Both his shoulders and his left arm were dark and wet, with blood. Coat fingered the buttons of his shirt for a moment, then decided against removing it. Climbing gingerly to his feet, he picked up the spade and slowly, painfully, began to dig. Chapter 5 Notes. It was well past midnight by the time Coat made it back to Noir, with Chronicler's limp body slung across his lacerated shoulders. The town's houses and shops were dark and silent, but the Waystone Inn was full of light. Bast stood in the doorway, practically dancing with irritation. When he spotted the approaching figure, he rushed down the street, waving a piece of paper angrily.
A note! You sneak out and leave me a note!
He hissed angrily.
What am I, some dockside whore?
Coat turned around and shrugged Chronicler's limp body into Bast's arms.
I knew you would just argue with me, Bast.
Bast held Chronicler easily in front of him.
It wasn't even a good note. If you are reading this, I am probably dead. What sort of note is that?
You weren't supposed to find it till morning, Coates said tiredly as they began to walk down the street to the inn. Bast looked down at the man he was carrying as if noticing him for the first time. Who is this? He shook him a little, eyeing him curiously before slinging him easily over one shoulder like a burlap sack.
Some unlucky sod who happened to be on the road at the wrong time, Coates said dismissively. Don't shake him too much. His head might be on a little loose.
What the hell did you sneak off for, anyway?
Bast demanded as they entered the inn.
If you're going to leave a note, it should at least tell me what...
Bast's eyes widened as he saw Coates in the light of the inn, pale and streaked with blood and dirt.
You can go ahead and worry if you want, Coates said dryly. It's every bit as bad as it looks.
You went out hunting for them, didn't you?
Bast hissed. Then his eyes widened.
No. You kept a piece of the one Carter killed. I can't believe you. You lied to me. To me!
Coates sighed as he trudged up the stairs.
Are you upset by the lie or the fact that you didn't catch me at it?
He asked as he began to climb. Bast spluttered.
I'm upset that you thought you couldn't trust me.
They let their conversation lapse as they opened one of the many empty rooms on the second floor, undressed Chronicler, and tucked him snugly into bed. Coat left the man's satchel and travel sack on the floor nearby. Closing the door to the room behind him, Coat said,
I trust you, Bast, but I wanted you safe. I knew I could handle it.
I could have helped, Reshi.
Bast's tone was injured.
You know I would have.
You can still help, Bast. Coates said as he made his way to his room and sat heavily on the edge of his narrow bed. I need some stitching done.
He began to unbutton his shirt.
I could do it myself, but the tops of my shoulders and my back are hard to reach.
Nonsense, Reshi. I'll do it.
Coates made a gesture to the door.
My supplies are down in the basement.
Bast sniffed disdainfully.
I will use my own needles, thank you very much. Good, honest bone, none of your nasty, jagged iron things, stabbing you like little slivers of hate.
He shivered.
Stream and stone, it's frightening how primitive you people are.
Bast bustled out of the room, leaving the door open behind him.
Coates slowly removed his shirt, grimacing and sucking his breath through his teeth as the dried blood stuck and tugged against the wounds.
His face went stoic again when Bast came back into the room with a basin of water and began to clean him off. As the dried blood was washed away, a wild scoring of long, straight cuts became clear. They gaped redly against the innkeeper's fair skin as if he had been slashed with a barber's razor or a piece of broken glass. There were perhaps a dozen cuts in all, most of them on the tops of his shoulders, a few across his back and along his arms. One started on the top of his head and ran down his scalp to behind his ear.
I thought you weren't supposed to bleed, Reshi, Bast said. Bloodless and all that.
Don't believe everything you hear in stories, Bast. They lie to you.
Well, you aren't nearly as bad off as I thought, Bast said, wiping his hands clean. Though by all rights, you should have lost a piece of your ear. Were they wounded like the one that attacked Carter?
Not that I could see, Coates said.
How many were there?
Five.
Five?
Bast said aghast.
How many did the other fellow kill?
He distracted one of them for a while, Coates said generously.
Ampauen, Reshi,
Bast said, shaking his head as he threaded a bone needle with something thinner and finer than gut.
You should be dead. You should be dead twice.
Coates shrugged.
It's not the first time I should be dead, Bast. I'm a fair hand at avoiding it.
Bast bent to his work.
This will sting a bit, he said, his hands strangely gentle. Honestly, Reshi, I can't see how you've managed to stay alive this long.
Coates shrugged again and closed his eyes.
Neither do I, Bast, he said. His voice was tired and grey.
Hours later, the door to Coates' room cracked open, and Bast peered inside. Hearing nothing but slow, measured breathing, the young man walked softly to stand beside the bed and bent over the sleeping man. Vast eyed the color of his cheeks, smelled his breath, and lightly touched his forehead, his wrist, and the hollow of his throat above his heart. Then Bast drew a chair alongside the bed and sat, watching his master, listening to him breathe. After a moment, he reached out and brushed the unruly red hair back from his face, like a mother would with a sleeping child. Then he began to sing softly, the tune lilting and strange, almost a lullaby.
How art to watch a mortal kindle and to dwindle day by day, knowing their bright souls are tinder and the wind will have its way. Would I could my own fire lend, what does your flickering portend?
Bast's voice faded, until at last he sat motionless, watching the rise and fall of his master's silent breathing through the long hours of morning's early dark. Chapter 6. The Price of Remembering. It was early evening of the next day before Chronicler came down the stairs to the common room of the Waystone Inn. Pale and unsteady, he carried his flat leather satchel under one arm. Coates sat behind the bar, paging through a book.
Ah, our unintentional guest. How's the head?
Chronicler raised a hand to touch the back of his head.
Throbs a bit when I move around too quickly, but it's still working.
Glad to hear it, Coates said.
Is this...
Chronicler hesitated, looking around.
Are we in Noir?
Coat nodded.
You are, in fact, in the middle of Noir.
He made a dramatic, sweeping gesture with one hand.
Thriving metropolis. Home to dozens.
Chronicler stared at the red-haired man behind the bar. He leaned against one of the tables for support.
God's charred body, he said breathlessly. It really is you, isn't it?
The innkeeper looked puzzled.
I beg your pardon?
I know you're going to deny it,
Chronicler said.
But what I saw last night...
The innkeeper held up a hand, quieting him.
Before we discuss the possibility that you've addled your wits with that crack to the head, tell me, how is the road to Tinue?
What?
Chronicler asked, irritated.
I wasn't heading to Tinue, I was... Oh, well, even aside from last night, the road's been pretty rough. I was robbed off by Abbott's Ford, and I've been on foot ever since. But it was all worth it since you're actually here.
The scribe glanced at the sword hanging over the bar and drew a deep breath, his expression becoming vaguely anxious.
I'm not here to cause trouble, mind you. I'm not here because of the price on your head.
He gave a weak smile.
Not that I could hope to trouble you.
Fine, the innkeeper interrupted as he pulled out a white linen cloth and began to polish the bar.
Who are you, then?
You can call me Chronicler.
I didn't ask what I could call you, Coates said. What is your name?
Devon. Devon Lochies.
Coates stopped polishing the bar and looked up.
Lochies? Are you related to Duke?
Coates trailed off, nodding to himself.
Yes, of course you are. Not a chronicler, the chronicler.
He stared hard at the balding man, looking him up and down.
How about that? The great debunker himself.
Chronicler relaxed slightly, obviously pleased to have his reputation precede him.
I wasn't trying to be difficult before. I haven't thought of myself as Devon in years. I left that name behind me long ago.
He gave the innkeeper a significant look.
I expect you know something of that yourself.
Coat ignored the unspoken question. I read your book years ago, The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus. Quite the eye-opener for a young man with his head full of stories. Looking down, he began moving the white cloth along the grain of the bar again. I'll admit I was disappointed to learn that dragons didn't exist. That's a hard lesson for a boy to learn. Chronicler smiled. Honestly, I was a little disappointed myself. I went looking for a legend and found a lizard. A fascinating lizard, but a lizard just the same. And now you're here, Coates said. Have you come to prove that I don't exist? Chronicler laughed nervously.
No. You see, we heard a rumor.
We? Coates interrupted.
I've been traveling with an old friend of yours, Scarpy.
Taken you under his wing, has he? Coates said to himself. How about that? Scarpy's apprentice.
More of a colleague, really.
Coates nodded, still expressionless. I might have guessed he would be the first to find me. Rumor mongers, both of you. Chronicler's smile grew sour, and he swallowed the first words that came to his lips. He struggled for a moment to recapture his calm demeanor.
So, what can I do for you?
Coates set aside the clean linen cloth and gave his best innkeeper's smile.
Something to eat? Or drink? A room for the night?
Chronicler hesitated.
I have it all right here,
Coates gestured expansively behind the bar.
Old wine, smooth and pale, honey mead, dark ale, sweet fruit liquor, plum, cherry, green apple, blackberry.
Coates pointed out the bottles in turn.
Come now. Surely you must want something.
As he spoke, his smile widened, showing too many teeth for a friendly innkeeper's grin. At the same time, his eyes grew cold and hard and angry. Chronicler dropped his gaze.
I thought that...
You thought? Coates said derisively, dropping all pretense of a smile.
I very much doubt it, otherwise you might have thought,
he bit off the word,
of how much danger you were putting me in by coming here.
Chronicler's face grew red.
I'd heard that Quoth was fearless,
he said hotly. The innkeeper shrugged.
Only priests and fools are fearless, and I've never been on the best of terms with God.
Chronicler frowned, aware that he was being baited.
Listen, he continued calmly. I was extraordinarily careful. No one except Scarpy knew I was coming. I didn't mention you to anyone. I didn't expect to actually find you. Imagine my relief,
Coates said sarcastically. Obviously disheartened, Chronicler spoke.
I'll be the first to admit that my coming here may have been a mistake.
He paused, giving Coates the opportunity to contradict him. Coates didn't. Chronicler gave a small, tight sigh and continued.
But what's done is done. Won't you even consider?
Coates shook his head.
It was a long time ago.
Not even 2 years, Chronicler protested.
And I am not what I was,
Coates continued without pausing.
And what was that exactly? Quoth,
he said simply, refusing to be drawn any further into an explanation.
Now I am Coates. I tend to my inn. That means beer is 3 shims and a private room costs copper.
He began polishing the bar again with a fierce intensity.
As you said, done is done. The stories will take care of themselves.
But, Coates looked up, and for a second Chronicler saw past the anger that lay glittering on the surface of his eyes. For a moment, he saw the pain underneath, raw and bloody like a wound too deep for healing. Then Coates looked away, and only the anger remained.
What could you possibly offer me that is worth the price of remembering? Everyone thinks you're dead. You don't get it, do you?
Coates shook his head, stuck between amusement and exasperation.
That's the whole point. People don't look for you when you're dead. Old enemies don't try to settle scores. People don't come asking you for stories, he said acidly.
Chronicler refused to back down.
Other people say
You're a myth.
I am a myth, Coates said easily, making an extravagant gesture. A very special kind of myth that creates itself. The best lies about me are the ones I told.
They say you never existed,
Chronicler corrected gently. Coates shrugged nonchalantly, his smile fading an imperceptible amount. Sensing weakness, Chronicler continued,
Some stories paint you as little more than a red-handed killer.
I'm that, too. Coates turned to polish the counter behind the bar. He shrugged again, not as easily as before.
I've killed men and things that were more than men. Every one of them deserved it.
Chronicler shook his head slowly.
The stories are saying, assassin, not hero. Quoth the arcane and quoth king killer are two very different men.
Coates stopped polishing the bar and turned his back to the room. He nodded once without looking up.
Some are even saying that there is a new Chandrian, a fresh terror in the night, his hair as red as the blood he spills.
The important people know the difference, Coates said as if he were trying to convince himself, but his voice was weary and despairing without conviction. Chronicler gave a small laugh.
Certainly, for now. But you of all people should realize how thin the line is between the truth and a compelling lie, between history and an entertaining story.
Chronicler gave his words a minute to sink in.
You know which will win, given time.
Coates remained facing the back wall, hands flat on the counter, his head was bowed slightly as if a great weight had settled onto him. He did not speak. Chronicler took an eager step forward, sensing victory.
Some people say there was a woman.
What do they know?
Coates' voice cut like a saw through bone.
What do they know about what happened?
He spoke so softly that Chronicler had to hold his breath to hear.
They say she.
Chronicler's words stuck in his suddenly dry throat as the room grew unnaturally quiet. Coates stood with his back to the room, a stillness in his body and a terrible silence clenched between his teeth. His right hand, tangled in a clean white cloth, made a slow fist. 8 inches away, a bottle shattered. The smell of strawberries filled the air alongside the sound of splintering glass. A small noise inside, so great a stillness, but it was enough. Enough to break the silence into small, sharp slivers. Chronicler felt himself go cold as he suddenly realized what a dangerous game he was playing. So this is the difference between telling a story and being in one, he thought numbly.
The fear.
Coates turned.
What can any of them know about her?
He asked softly. Chronicler's breath stopped when he saw Coates' face. The placid innkeeper's expression was like a shattered mask. Underneath, Coates' expression was haunted. Eyes half in this world, half elsewhere, remembering. Chronicler found himself thinking of a story he had heard, one of the many. The story told of how Quoth had gone looking for his heart's desire. He had to trick a demon to get it, but once it rested in his hand, he was forced to fight an angel to keep it.
I believe it, Chronicler found himself thinking. Before it was just a story, but now I can believe it. This is the face of a man who has killed an angel.
What can any of them know about me?
Coates demanded, a numb anger in his voice.
What can they know about any of this?
He made a short, fierce gesture that seemed to take in everything, the broken bottle, the bar, the world. Chronicler swallowed against the dryness in his throat.
Only what they're told.
Tat, 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 tat.
Liquor from the broken bottle began to patter an irregular rhythm onto the floor. Coates sighed out a long breath.
Tat, 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 tat.
Clever. You'd use my own best trick against me. You'd hold my story a hostage. I would tell the truth. Nothing but the truth could break me. What is harder than the truth?
A sickly, mocking smile flickered across his face. For a long moment, only the gentle tapping of drops against the floor kept the silence at bay. Finally, Coates walked through the doorway behind the bar. Chronicler stood awkwardly in the empty room, unsure whether or not he had been dismissed. A few minutes later, Coat returned with a bucket of soapy water. Without looking in the storyteller's direction, he began to gently, methodically wash his bottles. One at a time, Coat wiped their bottoms clean of the strawberry wine and set them on the bar between himself and Chronicler, as if they might defend him.
"So, you went looking for a myth and found a man," he said without inflection, without looking up. "You've heard the stories, and now you want the truth of things."
Radiating relief, Chronicler set his satchel down on one of the tables, surprised at the slight tremor in his hands.
"We got wind of you a while back. Just a whisper of a rumor. I didn't really expect..."
Chronicler paused, suddenly awkward.
"I thought you would be older."
"I am," Coat said. Chronicler looked puzzled. But before he could say anything, the innkeeper continued.
"What brings you into this worthless little corner of the world?" "An appointment with the Earl of Baden-Britt," Chronicler said, puffing himself up slightly. 3 days from now in Treya."
The innkeeper paused mid-polish.
"You expect to make it to the Earl's manor in 4 days?
He asked quietly.
"I am behind schedule," Chronicler admitted. "My horse was stolen near Abbott's Ford."
He glanced out the window at the darkening sky.
"But I'm willing to lose some sleep. I'll be off in the morning and out of your hair." "Well, I wouldn't want to cost you any sleep," Coat said sarcastically, his eyes gone hard again. "I can tell the whole thing in one breath."
He cleared his throat.
"I trooped, traveled, loved, lost, trusted, and was betrayed. Write that down and burn it for all the good it will do you."
"You needn't take it that way," Chronicler said quickly.
"We can stay the whole night if you like, and a few hours in the morning as well."
"How gracious," Coat snapped.
"You'll have me tell my story in an evening? With no time to collect myself, no time to prepare?"
His mouth made a thin line.
"No, go dally with your Earl. I'll have none of it."
Chronicler spoke quickly.
"If you're certain, you'll need..."
"Yes." Coat set a bottle down on the bar, hard.
"It's safe to say I'll need more time than that, and you'll get none of it tonight. A real story takes time to prepare."
Chronicler frowned nervously and ran his hands through his hair.
"I could spend tomorrow collecting your story."
He trailed off at the sight of Coat shaking his head. After a pause, he started again, almost talking to himself.
"If I pick up a horse in Baden, I can give you all day tomorrow, most of the night, and a piece of the following day."
He rubbed his forehead.
"I hate riding at night, but..."
"I'll need 3 days," Coat said. "I'm quite sure of it." Chronicler blanched.
"But the Earl..."
Coat waved a hand dismissively.
"No one needs 3 days," Chronicler said firmly. "I interviewed Orin Velsitter. Orin Velsitter, mind you. He's 80 years old and done 200 years worth of living, 500 if you count the lies. He sought me out,"
Chronicler said with particular emphasis.
"He only took 2 days.
"That is my offer," the innkeeper said simply. "I'll do this properly, or not at all."
"Wait," Chronicler brightened suddenly. "I've been thinking about this all backwards," he said, shaking his head at his own foolishness. "I'll just visit the Earl, then come back. You can have all the time you like then. I could even bring Scarpy back with me."
Coat gave Chronicler a look of profound disdain.
"What gives you the slightest impression that I would be here when you came back?"
he asked incredulously.
"For that matter, what makes you think you're free to simply walk out of here knowing what you know?"
Chronicler went very still. He swallowed and started again.
You saying that..."
"The story will take 3 days," Coat interrupted.
"Starting
tomorrow. That is what I am saying.
Chronicler closed his eyes and ran his hand over his face. The Earl would be furious, of course, no telling what it might take to get back in his good graces,